And what brought me to where I'm at now and how I approach life is I think just history and life and experiences and failing and succeeding and questioning and just figuring out who you are. I think being open to evolving, and that's something I'm always interested and curious about. And I feel like actually I know that if I'm not evolving, there is no point in being here.
Welcome back to the Magic of Transformation podcast. I am your host, Stephanie Zeller. I'm really excited that you are tuning in to today's episode. It is such a special one. It's one of the most enjoyable conversations that I've ever recorded for this podcast. Today, I am joined by Jay Bartley, who is a Rolfer out of Los Angeles. We talk about so much good stuff. He's just a really amazing person. He's so grounded. He's such a pleasure to be around, and I wanted to share him with all of you. I really think you're going to enjoy this conversation. And if you're here today, there's a little nugget in this episode for you somewhere. So be sure to stay all the way through the end. We talk about embodiment practices, awareness, moving into flow and ease, dancing with life. We talk about deeper connections that you can grow and cultivate with people rather than, you know, having like the small talk, superficial connections. There's just so many gems in today's episode. I really hope you enjoy it. If you would like to get in touch with Jay, be sure to check out the show notes. I have all of his links below. And I also have my links below to the Transformation School, all of my free courses, free goodies. Be sure to check all those links out. If you like this episode, share it with somebody that you feel like could benefit. And don't forget to follow or subscribe to the show and give me a 5 stars wherever you are listening. Thank you so much for doing that. I really appreciate you. Without further ado, let's get into this very special episode with Jay Bartley. Enjoy. We met in LA when I came to you for some rolfing. I'd never been to see a rolfer before, but somebody had told me that I should and try like the 10 series. That's what it's called, right?
Yes.
I was looking at different rolfers in LA. And there was something about your website that really drew me in. I think you had photos of you dancing on it.
Yes.
And that you just struck me as somebody that was really embodied, which not all body workers are. And then when we chatted for the first time on the call, and then when I met you in person, the thing that really, I guess, struck me was you were very embodied, just like I felt on your website. And there was a flow and an ease to you. And I almost want to say, I mean, the phrase that's coming to me is it feels like you dance with life.
Oh, that's interesting.
Does that resonate?
It does. I mean, I don't know if I've ever put it that way, but when I hear you say it and I reflect of how I try to approach life or how I interact with life, that does make sense. And I do want to say too, just in regards to my sessions, that's how I look at a session. Because I always think of it as a duet, because it's not, I'm not just doing something to you.
Yeah.
You know, you facilitating something, but there's a give and take. So there is a flow in regards to the way I work and I like to work. So that does make sense. It does resonate with me. Yes.
And do you feel that? Because I guess when we talk about a flow, you're tuned into an existing pulse or flow and to what the energy is doing. Do you feel like that extends beyond your sessions as well, that you live in that way?
Yes. I pause because I think it's taken a long time to get to that place for me.
Yeah.
And there are still those moments of, you know, feeling, you know, anxiety or chaos and just trying to find my body within the space I'm in. So I do feel like it's a continuing practice, but I do feel like I approach life that way. Yes.
So that's something that I have moved into a lot as well, in terms of, I guess, looking at life as a dance and not being in resistance to life or at odds with anything that occurs to me in my life.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like, oh, okay, this just arose or this situation just happened. And then there's a receptivity that I feel like I hold to that now. I didn't used to, but I do now. And then an awareness of how I can respond to that in the most, I guess, peaceful way. And it's taken me also a long time to move into that stance with life of me just even allowing there to be a flow or an ease versus me feeling like it's me versus life. So I'm curious what comes up for you around some maybe more key things that you've done or that have happened in your life, or the maybe the ways you've looked at life that have gotten you to this point that have allowed you to be in more of a flow.
Yeah, I mean, and just listening to you talk about dance, and it's interesting because dance is, you had mentioned embodied and dance, and I've been a dancer, I am a dancer. But being a dancer, there's a presentation, there's something you have to get correct, there's repetition in rehearsal. And so I thought I was fully embodied when I was a dancer, and I was to that degree. But then moving into my Rolfing practice and then studying Rolf movement and other forms of movement brought me to an even deeper level of embodiment. And we all are embodied because we all have bodies, but it's a matter of really paying attention. So I was just that kind of struck me when you were talking. So it's not answering your question, but so I love the fact that you are able to move. And I feel like it's more movement and kind of organicity is what I'm sensing hearing you talk. And what brought me to where I'm at now and how I approach life is, I think, just history and life and experiences and failing and succeeding and questioning and just figuring out who you are. I think being open to evolving, and that's something I'm always interested and curious about. And I feel like, actually, I know that if I'm not evolving, there is no point being here in this body, in this life, because I'm not interested in just moving as the days go and just kind of not being open to experiences. Yeah, I think experience ultimately has brought me to where I'm at. And again, I don't not have my times of spiraling or questioning and doubting, but just I think my practice of embodiment and my explorations, I like to call them, has allowed me to feel more into my back space, which then allows me to pause, which allows me to stop before I start to go into that sort of chaotic sort of space.
Yeah, so explain for the listener what you mean by backspace.
So whatever space, whatever environment we are, we inhabit that space, that environment. And so we have a front space, we have space above our head, we have space to the right and the left, and we have backspace. And a lot of times people aren't aware of the backspace because we are so, presentational. We have our computer screens in front of us. We don't even have to turn around anymore if we are driving to back our car up because we have a camera. And so backspace for me allows me to feel into the space behind me to slow things down. And sometimes it's just me leaning into the chair like I am right now. I'm feeling my backspace. I'm feeling the musculature and the skeleton that is receiving the chair behind me. And it's just allowing me to, like, oh, it's okay. I'm slowing down. I'm having a conversation. I don't need to speak fast. So it just having that awareness of that space behind me allows me to slow down and to be able to pause. So that's what I mean by backspace.
In my experience with working with you, and then also some other teachers, particularly with like Feldenkrais and somatic experiencing and just becoming aware of the space in my body, but particularly with working with you, I remember early on having the realization, I think probably because you drew my awareness into the backspace and I almost couldn't even visualize it really at first. It was like I couldn't sense the space behind me. But I noticed that I was actually physically leaning forward all the time. Like my head was forward, my chest was forward. It was like off center from the lower half of my body. And that when I would either get work with you or if I was on my own, bring my attention and awareness to the backspace and then like settle my body back, take a breath, slow down. There was a, I I guess, a natural groundedness that would arise.
Yeah.
And I think for probably a lot of people listening, it's almost like, what are you even talking about? How, what do you mean when you sense into the backspace? But I guess I would just encourage whoever's listening to try this to, for a moment, just, I mean, you can even turn and look around you to get a sense of like what's behind me, and then feel your body in relationship with the space behind you. And there is a sense of like it'll pull you back, pull your awareness back and slow you down. And it's funny because when I teach people how to get in touch with their intuition and how to receive intuitive, like sometimes psychic information, and I will often guide them to like rest in their back body
Yeah.
and be in awareness, because we can be so much more receptive to receiving information when we're in that state. And then the other thing I've noticed is, particularly clients of mine, because I work with a lot of really like very highly successful people, but it feels like they're, and I've used this analogy with them before, and it's very familiar to me, but it's like they're on a forward train that's going like a million miles an hour. And then when they try and stop the train, it's hard to stop it for a while. But I think sensing into that backspace where your back body is a good way to start to slow that train down.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I might have two thoughts for that. One is to go back to what backspace is. It's not necessarily just the back from the waist up, you're to the neck. It could be the backs behind your head. You can feel the back of your cranium and just get a sense of the backspace. It could be all the way to the back of your legs to your heels. And I think that's what you were talking about, I'm assuming, is when you said you were always feeling forward. Is that it allowed you to feel a little bit more? I don't know if you said supported, there was another word you used, but you felt your feet in a different way.
Yes.
That's being embodied. That's noticing something different in your body by just kind of like slowing things down and noticing like, oh, when I'm not so forward, this all changes. It also allows you to see in front of you. It allows your peripheral vision to expand because you're actually looking out. There's a tendency, and I can speak personally and with some clients I've worked with, that when you are leaning forward, there's a focal. It's like you're so focused, you don't see anything else.
Yes.
So it changes. It's not just, oh, I just feel my back. It then changes all these other perceptions, how you perceive the space. That was one thing about the backspace. And then the other thing you said is, people that are highly successful are just going, going, going. They don't know how to slow down. And I can relate to that because when I have clients all week and then the weekend comes, or even when I go on a vacation, it's like it takes me a few days to unwind because we're so conditioned to be busy. And if you're not busy, you're not successful. You're not doing. And so there's that sense of like, oh, if I'm not doing something, there's something that I'm doing wrong. And so I could relate to that feeling. It usually takes me a couple of days to actually slow down and say, oh, I can just be in the space now. I don't need to be producing anything right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because us talking about backspace and just how that actually can alter even the way that you walk and move.
Yeah.
And I found that working with you, that after our session, I would feel so much more connected to my feet, to the ground. I would feel definitely more supported. I would feel more calm, more stable, more aware, more peaceful, but also more energized.
Yeah, interesting.
And when I would notice you walking, that's something I actually always noticed, was that you did seem so connected to your back body and in your feet. And I want to talk about feet for a minute,
Yeah.
because this is the thing. I feel like every session you're bringing me back to my feet, and it's been such an extraordinary revelation for me. Because that is something that was definitely new to our work together. No one had really told me that before. I mean, I had had some Feldenkrais people that I worked with mention to me, like, oh, when you sit down, you lift your feet. Like, your feet aren't on the floor. Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think?
You would lift your feet.
Yes, they would tell me that when I would work with them. Because, like, when I would be in a chair, I would kind of lift my feet up and they would notice that and then reflect it back to me. And they would be like, why do you think there's a constant kind of lifting of your feet?
Oh.
And for me, that really felt like a yeah, I don't feel safe here. Like, I don't feel grounded right now at all. And my body is reflecting the way that I'm feeling internally, which I was like kind of always in a self-protecting mode. But then when I started working with you, you were always guiding me back to my feet and the importance of being in my feet. So I really started after probably like 6 months of hearing you say it again and again. I was like, okay,
Over
yeah, okay,
and
hold on. So I remember going to yoga and I would just only focus on my feet and I would focus on feeling the ground beneath my feet and feeling the ground supporting me. And like the whole hour, I would just like that would be the only thing I would focus on. And with time, things started really shifting where I started, it was like I was developing a different relationship with the earth, with honestly, I feel like just my nervous system and me feeling just safe to just be here.
I mean, that's beautiful to hear. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I love what I do is to hear, and I know I witnessed it, working with you for a little over a year.
Yeah.
And so I love to hear this and that was your experience. So I appreciate that.
But I want to hear you talk about why that is so important.
Why your feet are important?
Yeah, just in general, because I guarantee you probably no one listening to this has heard like that they should have a connection to their feet.
I mean, I'm playing with my feet right now as we're talking.
Yeah, there you go. And I guess I'm also curious. I mean, again, I always had I guess an intuitive sense that you were very connected to your feet. And I see this sometimes with like some athletes or dancers or just people that are a little bit more earthy and embodied. Like they do seem to have more of a, but well, I think they live more in the lower half of their body.
I mean, that's one thing too. I mean, the people tend to either live more in the lower half or the upper half. It depends. There's nothing wrong with one or the other, more good, one or the other. It just is. So it's just experiencing another. It let's say you tend to live more in the upper half. Okay, let's explore how can we bring you back down to the ground and how can we balance both the upper half and bottom.
Yeah.
And so it's an exploration, and that's the practice of embodiment.
Well, my other question, I guess, before you kind of pontificate about feet is I know that one of my patterns has been to live in the upper half of my body. Like I'm very much in my brain. I mean, that's changed a lot, but especially for the majority of my life, that's where I was living. I was completely, I mean, I feel like I wasn't connected to my body really at all. I was living mostly a dissociated life. I didn't have an awareness of my body. That had changed a lot by the time I had started working with you, but of course I'm always trying to go deeper.
And there's a safety in that. And there's, I want to make clear that there is nothing wrong with that. And it's a resource. And so if one is wanting to explore,
Yeah.
being relating to the ground in a different way and it doesn't feel safe to know that and to honor that and to know that they have the ability to go back to the place that's comfortable for them.
Sure. Well, yes, but comfortable doesn't actually always feel safe. Like comfortable is just familiar, right? Like, like me not feeling a connection to the spaces that I'm in or to my feet or to the lower half of my body or to the earth, even though that was familiar, I still didn't feel safe there.
It was a knowing place. It was a place that you just went to.
Right. I mean, that is what had kept me safe. From trauma and that kind of thing, right? In the past. I mean, a lot of times we dissociate because of trauma. And so then I think the work, especially the work that I've tried to do and some of the work I was trying to do with you was, okay, I have a history of trauma. I've done a lot of trauma healing, like therapy and that kind of thing. And I've done some somatic experiencing, some body work and stuff, but I want to go deeper into my embodiment. I want to go deeper into the lower half of my body. I want to feel safe in whatever space that I'm in, no matter what. I want to be able to feel my breath moving and be aware of all of these things. So coming back to feet, my curiosity is first, if that's something that you work on with everyone, or if it was something in particular you noticed about me. And then two, if you could just elaborate for the listener on why you feel like a connection to the feet is important.
Working with you, what I did appreciate, I want to just say that I always appreciated you wanting to go deeper and explore. And so that's something that was really always fun for me in a session with you to work with you. And in regards to bringing you to your feet, I bring feet in all my sessions. It might not be
Yeah.
the number one thing, but feet are very important. And for you, I knew it was in a session, but I always want to have people allow themselves to feel that foundation. Feet for me are important. I mean, I think because I was, I mean, barefoot for, 30 years while I was a dancer, modern dancer, and I danced barefoot. I mean, I would wear tennis shoes every so often, depending on the piece, but I just appreciate feeling my feet. And I feel you receive information from the bottom up. And if you're not in your feet, everything else above, and that could be the knees to the hips to the shoulders to the jaw, there's going to be a holding if you're not, and it works with the same thing going top to bottom. If there's something that's not really being lived in, there's going to be a holding pattern, and we all have holding patterns. But that's one thing of why feet's so important to me, is because there's then obviously something that you're not allowing the ground to meet. And it's about receiving the ground and letting the ground receive you as you receive the ground. So there's that two-way connection as well. But it is information. And if we don't allow ourselves to feel the ground, we're missing out on something. I think shoes are a lovely invention and they can be beautiful, but I think if you can take them off, even 5 minutes a day of just to explore your feet, feel the skin underneath your toes, go outside and touch grass, sand, rocks, of just getting them, wake them up. I like the idea of juicy feet. I like supple feet, to really explore and to feel that connection. So it's important in all my sessions, or they come in saying, I want to have more connection to the ground or my feet. So it just depends too. But yeah, all sessions I include feet and the ground.
You spoke a lot about receiving the information.
Yes.
And so that's kind of an extension of increasing your awareness and your senses and your perception, right?
Yes, because it will change. I mean, just like anything, it'll change the way you perceive the space you inhabit. So, and you can try this at home, go outside barefoot. Notice, maybe notice sounds or the scent of something, or out, just whatever you're sensing outside, then put shoes on and notice if that changes for you.
Yeah, or even the other way around, I think.
Or the other way around.
Yeah.
Yes, it changes everything.
How else does it change things?
I mean, it can just change your own relationship to your own body.
Yeah.
I mean, for an example, if you're barefoot, let's say you're having shoulder pain and you have these shoes and they're supportive shoes, they have the insole, and you feel your shoulder still feeling uncomfortable for whatever reason, and you take your shoes off and you feel the ground and you're just a little bit more in the ground because you can feel it. The sensations matter. So you're just feeling the coolness of the concrete or the edges of a pebbles or the blades of the grass. You're just sensing something different, which then can give your shoulder and your own nervous system different information. And so it changes so much. And that's just an example in regards to just one thing of like if someone is experiencing discomfort in their shoulder. But overall, it just changes sensation-wise, if you're aware of it. I mean, that goes back to, embodied. We all have a body, but if you're just going, and never slowing down, you're never going to have a chance to feel these little subtle qualities that can change something. But it's a process, it's a practice too.
In what ways has your life gotten better as you have become more and more and more embodied?
I think just being able to appreciate the simplicity of things, of going for a walk or a hike and noticing a tree trunk that has this certain texture to it and just wanting to put my hand on that tree trunk gives me so much information,
Yeah.
in regards to just the tactile feedback or maybe even relating to that tree
Yeah.
differently than you would just by passing by. So it's allowed me to enjoy the simplicity. It's allowed me to slow down in my life and not feel the itchiness of having to go, even though I did say earlier that, it takes me a while to slow down. But it has allowed me to drop in easier too. I mean, there's moments where it's harder than others. And I think just recognizing if I do have discomfort or if an achiness, I'm not going to just primarily focus on that. I look at it as a learning experience of like, okay, so this is what's going on in my body right now. I'm just going to slow down and not necessarily focus on it or try not to focus on it, but really just allow myself to feel into other senses. just the environment. Like I'm hearing birds right now outside, and because I think I'm allowing that.
Yes.
So I think those are the three, I think I mentioned three things that have helped me in my life of just practicing the embodiment. I think also just in regards to sessions too, it's allowed me to just have pauses in my sessions and to let a client feel what they're feeling before moving on to the next thing, whatever that is.
Well, this goes back to being in a flow and at ease with life. Not that difficult things don't arise, but I think when it feels like you're gripping to life and the way you want things to go, and you're not experiencing, you're controlling, when those discomforts arise, there can be a hyper focus on the discomfort versus what I hear you saying is, yeah, when the discomforts arise, I relax my attention and awareness.
Yeah, because if you notice if there's a controlling or there's a tightening. I mean, when you said the word, it was like I felt this tightening in my body.
Yeah.
A lot of people go through life that way. And so how can you find the expansion?
Right. Did you used to be like that?
I think so. I think I lived my life more that way in the past. And there's moments where it does come back up for whatever, maybe it's the circumstance or the situation or that brings me back to that place because it's so familiar.
Yeah.
It's a hyper attentive. I was always ready. And so it's a very familiar place for me to be. And on some level, it is a comforting place because I know it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very familiar, but I have worked a lot on finding and adapting
And responding differently, yeah.
and responding differently. I mean, yeah, and that's yeah, it's about adaptability and orientating yourself in a different way or a place or space.
Yeah, something else that I noticed about you when we started working together was I was at a turning point in my life at that time where I had just kind of moved away from a lot of relationships. So it was kind of like at a blank slate moment where I found myself just not able to relate to a lot of people that I used to be able to relate to because I'd made so many changes in my life, but also personal transformation changes. And I just wasn't resonating, I guess, with those people anymore. But particularly because of the way that conversation would go when I would talk to those people, I had realized that a lot of my conversations in the past had been to maybe commiserating or helping each other through suffering. And that was kind of the center point of a lot of those relationships. And then when I had essentially become an expert on personal transformation, I realized I don't need the assistance of anyone anymore verbally when we're talking about my struggles. Like that's something I deal with on my own. So then I kind of had this weird place of like, how do I even relate to people now? Because if we're not talking about our struggles, what the fuck are we talking about? And then around that time is when I started working with you. And you struck me right away as someone that, well, I didn't hear you bitching all the time. And I mean, I had worked with other practitioners where I did. It's not like it was just a practitioner thing. Like this was a J thing. Like occasionally there'd be like little funny things that we would joke about, but there wasn't a density to you in terms of I'm walking around feeling resentful and bitter about life and everything is always bothering me. That's how I connect with people. You know what I'm talking about? How about how people connect in terms of that's how they connect is through kind of just the commiserating.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And just feeds off of each other. It's like a bad relationship.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah, it's like yeah, it's you say one negative thing and I'll say another and it's like, oh, this kind of feeds and you're feeding the monster in a sense.
yes. And, but it feels like connection. Before you realize what real connection can feel like.
Oh yeah, but I think that's also comes down to not paying attention. I think that comes back to the whole thing of, feeling your feet, feeling your back space, practicing an embodied place, because I mean, I use this analogy a lot. It's like most people, when you and I don't, and I'm interested in what you have to say regarding this commiserating aspect between two people. But most people, when you see somebody on the street, if they bother to look up from their phone, which I will say that drives me absolutely nuts.
That's literally the only thing I think I've ever heard you complain about.
And I'm not bitter about it. I'm not bitter about it. I just wish I have hope for humanity.
Yeah, sure.
I want people to live their best. But it is when someone you see on the street and you're like, oh, how are you? I'm good. Like there's no thought of like,
Yeah.
wait, how am I? And not that you want someone to like pour out to you. It's not about that, but
Yeah,
it's just,
trauma dump on you or something.
yeah, like, well, this happened today. But just to sort of stop and say, how am I feeling? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know what got me to.
No, but that's perfect because that really speaks to what I'm talking about. And I love that I hadn't thought of that attention and awareness piece, but oh my God, you're so right. Because now when I have those, because I'm thinking some family members here too. Like even when I have those conversations now, I feel such a lack of presence in them. It just feels like they're talking to me automatically. Like, and I don't know where their heart is. I can't feel their heart. I don't know where their real awareness is. It's almost like they're talking to me, but then they're also thinking about other things. And I'm like, who am I even talking to right now?
Yeah, and don't you find though with family too is that they have this and I'm not saying everybody in my family, but there's a thing where it's like time has stopped or it stood still.
Yes.
And you're that age, like you're 12 forever,
Yes.
and there's that they see you, and they can only relate to you as you're a 12-year-old or whatever.
Right. And there's no curiosity. And I mean, I can say that I'm guilty of this too sometimes with family members, not being as deeply curious as I could be and wondering, wait a minute, even though I've known this person my whole life, maybe they're not the same person I met with 6 months ago. Maybe there's been evolution in them, and maybe I should be curious about who they are now and hold that open awareness. But again, that there's not enough presence there.
Yeah, there's not a give and take, and so why waste time?
Yes.
And I don't want to say waste time, but I am not the type of person that can go to a dinner party and just talk small talk. I'd rather stay.
Oh, no shit.
And so it's like, so I mean, I'm not interested in like, oh, how you doing? What do you do? Yeah, I'm just that bores me, and it's just not exciting to me, and it's not anything of interest, and so I'm just not interested. There's not, and most people aren't listening to you.
Oh,
There's
100%.
not a good.
100%. Yeah.
It's there. I mean, I have a lot to say, not a lot to say, but it's like a lot of people just want to be heard, and they want to talk, and that's fine. But that's where I like just going back to my practice for a second. That's why I do a certain amount of it, a half hour intake, because people want to be heard. People aren't listened to,
Yeah.
and so I think it's really important to give people that time to really sense into what they want to say and how are they feeling, because most people can't listen.
Yeah.
And so that goes back to that dinner party thing, and I'm kind of veering off, but
I mean, I think an intake's an interesting example because you do an intake before you see a client for the first time. And there's very thoughtful dialogue in those intakes, having been a part of it myself, which I would say that reaches such a greater depth than I guess even most conversations most people would have, where maybe they do want to be heard, but there's also not even an awareness, I think, a lot of times that they're even being heard when they are being heard.
Very good point. Like you said too, they are thoughtful questions because of two reasons. Maybe there's more than two, but two I can think of is one is I want people to know what they're getting themselves into in a sense. Like this is what the session's like in regards to just certain questions about your body.
Yeah.
And the other thing is just to have people kind of just feel into that question or think about that question that they probably have never been asked before.
Yes.
So those are the two reasons why it's very important for me to have a thoughtful intake and a conversation with somebody before we do any work together.
This is a kind of, I think, an aha moment for me, though, because I mean, I, of course, have felt, especially in those older relationships that I've kind of walked away from, that when I re-engage with those people, that there is such a lack of presence and awareness in them. But I was sort of always framing it as what I was walking away from was just kind of the commiserating, but it wasn't just commiserating, it was mindless commiserating, right?
I think so.
Although I don't know if there's mindful commiserating. I don't know if that's a
I think it
thing.
could. I mean, we're kind of having a mindful, well, we're not commiserating, but we are having a, I'll have to get back to you on that one. I'm not sure if there's mindful commiserating. I mean, probably not. If I think about just what we defined it as, is people are just getting together without any sense of, it's just what they, it's like familiarity. It's what they know. If they're not being asked certain questions in their daily life, like deeper questions, that's all they know. And so there's no history, there's no experience of anything else.
Yeah, I've also found that those people that don't seem like have experience having deeper, thoughtful conversations also don't ask themselves those deeper, thoughtful questions.
No, and again, it's not a bad thing. It's just like, are they capable? Like, I don't, I think some people reach a point where it's like, that's it. And that's fine. And
Well, oh
I
no. I mean, I think people are generally much more capable than they're aware of, but I think that people just don't know that there's an alternative way.
I think, yeah, I mean, I think that it's so, it's like you can't really answer the question in such a,
True, I guess. How would,
because it's, I don't know. I mean, I just, there are some people that come to mind and it's like they don't, they've never experienced it. They don't have an awareness. They only know a certain, you know, there's so many factors in what, how a person evolves or why a person evolves. And so to say this is why is not fair, you know? So there's so many ways, there's so many things, but it's like when you say, going back to the commiserating, it's, you know, when you say, oh, you've outgrown somebody, you know, that phrase of outgrowing, I think it's because one party has been open to evolving and creating and being open to other possibilities. And there's that step difference. And it doesn't mean whoever isn't doing that isn't necessarily less evolved person or a better person or a bad whatever. It's just this other person's kind of moved onward. But I think again, it takes presence and it takes all of the, those other things we've talked about to get to that place.
So connected to that and to the start of our conversation in terms of being in ease and flow with life, which is something that I just feel like you embody in so many ways. The other thing I've noticed about you, and I think this lends itself to being more at ease and in flow with life, is you tend to, and I mean, I feel like we just heard it in the way you were speaking about other people, is you tend to be You tend to embody a space of non-judgment.
Yes.
Where did you get that from? How did you evolve to be that way?
I think just experience. I mean, I do want to say there are times when, and you know, I am guilty of judging sometimes. But in my daily life, if I do come from a judgmental place, I do try to pause and reflect, where is that coming from? So there is that moment of kind of, okay, slowing things down or stopping and just where, why am I doing that?
In order to move into a space of non-attachment and non-judgment, you have to value those things.
Yes.
Otherwise, if you don't value them, then you're going to be really locked into your judgments and think that those are correct.
Yes.
How has your life changed since you become less attached and less judgmental? Or how has the way you feel changed?
I don't know. For some reason, the word relatable comes to mind. Relationships are, I guess, more relatable or more,
Well, you're probably more. I mean, I find when I'm less judgmental and I'm less like, this person should be doing this or behaving like this, or this person shouldn't have done this, when I'm less like that, I can feel that person more and feel their heart more and feel connection to them more and feel connection to humanity more. And there's just more connectivity,
yes.
less separation.
It's less separation. Yeah. Yeah, there's just there's more of a an open-heartedness and of just accepting something the way they are with or something that is without valuing it or placing value on it. But I when I am judgmental, it's more about I care. I care deeply about humanity and the state of our world. And I take it really at heart when I think people can do and be better. Whatever that is, if someone cuts me off in traffic, it's like, do and be better. Like, if everybody just did that, there'd be less anger and all this violence. And so I think that's where my judgmental antennas come up is just when I feel like somebody can do and be better because I have hope. And that's in my daily life. I will say I'm not. In my practice, I don't ever feel judgmental. I feel open to whatever is whatever someone's expressing, whatever they're coming to the table with, of okay, let's see what we can explore here. And so that's what's interesting. It's like I think I'm constantly trying to bring that aspect into my daily life, the way I am in my sessions. And so that's something I'm working on, either with my therapist or just my own thought process.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful thing. And I for sure felt that in sessions with you, that there was always such a deep curiosity and almost like a reverence for like, yeah, whatever you're feeling is right.
There's nothing wrong with what you're feeling,
Yeah.
and there's nothing wrong with you.
Right.
I think we're in that fix it culture of like, oh, this is what's wrong with me. I'm coming in with this hurts, and I've been told this, and it's like, well, what, sometimes I'll pause someone and I'll say, but okay, so all these things don't feel good. What feels good?
Yeah.
And that sort of knocks people's socks off because they're like, oh, wait, what?
Right.
And it's interesting because I had a client recently who came in for certain things. And then I brought that to his awareness. And I said, can you tell me anything that feels good? And then a couple weeks later, he came in for his next session. He's like, it really kind of just put things, it settled things for me. And I'm not so negative about things, and I can appreciate things. And that was just, one or two sessions. And that was beautiful to hear that someone was actually able to change their perception of what they were experiencing in their body.
Yes.
And you go on this, negative train. I mean, I think we all do, but it's a matter of can you slow down and pause and notice something else, which then has that effect on your nervous system and physically and structurally and all these things that it changes you.
Well, and you hold that in your body and your frequency. I mean, that's what I've been mentioning is like that I always felt that with you. Like there was an ease, a flow, non-judgment. And then going back to the, it wasn't just about commiserating. And it was interesting because I was at that point at sort of like a turning point of trying to create different kinds of relationships where we could connect in ways other than suffering. It was a real joy to be able to do that with you because we could connect about the squirrels and connect
The girls.
and, just like, yeah, what are your thoughts on this film and the just, I don't know, uplifting things. Like it's just like you asked that client of yours, what's positive? What are you feeling that feels good?
I mean, why? I mean, it's just like it's so easy to be negative and to bitch and moan. Like, it's just so easy.
Yeah.
And it can be easy to be positive and think about things, but I mean, it does take a little bit more effort, especially if you're not in that place of practice. I think anything, it's a practice. And anytime you give it some time, it evolves and you evolve. And that's why it's a practice. Like sometimes when I go to sit and meditate, sometimes it feels really good. Other times I can't wait to get up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it change, we're like 70% water, so we're always changing. We're never going to stay the same. And so it's about just leaning into that organicity, that fluidity in our system, that dance that you mentioned of just being open to the possibilities of the what ifs and try not to be so not grippy but controlling, or because that changes just saying controlling kind of changes what I feel in my body.
Yeah.
There's a clenching, and unfortunately a lot of us go through our lives clenching.
Yeah.
And it's about just bringing and honoring time in the process of slowing things down and feeling into your feet, feeling into the back space.
Yeah.
It's a process.
Yes. But I do want to just say, because you've said a few times, like time and experience, I do want to caveat for the listener that you're not just moving through time and living through your experiences, and there's zero reflection and zero integration and zero, like, because I think that is actually how most people live. And you even hear like a lot of people in their like 70s being like, oh, I have a lot of experience on you, but they're completely unconscious. And so, experience in and of itself doesn't necessarily make you more embodied or wiser. You're talking about experience and time with reflection, with your practices.
With your movement explorations, with going outside and feeling your feet on the ground that time, not just going through life with all these experiences. Experiences meaning it could be social, it could be whatever it is. So, I mean, but it's not just filling your time card with all these experiences, but experiences meaning sitting for a moment and just noticing the sound that surrounds you, noticing the space behind you, So those sort of experiences, what I'm talking about, and the time you give it is what I mean.
I think this is a good place to close with this particular topic of just finding flow and ease with life and living from that embodied perspective and growing your kind of awareness. And I feel like you've given a lot of good ideas for the listener in terms of how to start to feel into that, like taking your shoes off, going outside, noticing what's around you, feeling into the backspace. Is there anything that is coming to you that you want to add for somebody that really might be a beginner of this, of cultivating either a deeper sense of embodiment or a deeper sense of awareness of themselves and the space around them?
I think just be patient with yourself. It can be challenging to slow down, especially when you are used to moving through life at a certain speed and just going from one thing to the next. The one thing that I think about when I just said that is instead of going from one thing to the next, and so that could be anything from going to one meeting to the next, or making a phone call right after the next phone call, or checking an email and responding right away, is just to pause wherever you're at. And that could be, I mean, if you're driving, pull over. But if you're sitting, or if you're standing, or if you're going from one, wherever you are, just try to pause for a moment and notice how you feel after doing that one activity. And that could be literally 10 seconds. Like it doesn't, you don't have to spend 5 minutes doing this. And just feel like, and you might not even be able to put a word to it, to a sensation, and that's fine. But that begins the practice of like tuning into some sensation. And that could be anything like, oh my God, I feel really anxious. I feel a clenching in my chest. And that could be something that you've experienced your whole life and you never even knew because you never paused. And so it's just practicing being able to put a word to a sensation. And again, 5 seconds could be the beginning of just something really beautiful, of developing and evolving your relationship with yourself. And that then changes your relationships to the world outside and to your relationships that are right next to you. But it just changes relationships too.
Beautiful. Okay, how can people find you if they want to know more? What's your social media and your website?
My website's bartleyrolfing.com. I also have an Instagram account, and that's under bartleyrolfing.
Cool. So I'll have all that in the show notes.
It was a pleasure to see you.
Yeah, thank you so much.